Welcome to the Wellsteading Podcast. This is episode 286. Today is April 15th, 2019. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Well, happy tax day. I am more than thrilled to see this tax season go away. I haven't had much time for podcasting, so maybe over the next couple weeks, I'll be able to get some more content out to you and get through some of the backlog of listener questions and feedback that I've received. And that's exactly what I want to do in this episode. Now, this is going to be a quick one, but I've gotten a lot of people asking me about IPOs, initial public offerings. I've promised to do an episode on it. I've put it off for way too long, although it is things that we've talked about in the past, so I don't feel bad about that. You can always go back and look through the archives of old episodes and run across things that I've commented, you know, in the past about. But hey, in any case, there's going to be a quick episode, but I'm going to give you three reasons that I personally never invest in IPOs. Now, one of the reasons I'm not going to give is something I know a lot of you wise guys are thinking, and that's, hey, John is just like an old curmudgeon, and he's too conservative, and he's just investing for his retirement portfolio. And so he avoids these momentum popular type stocks. Well, that is true, and I am an old curmudgeon, but you know how I got to be at the net worth I am today? By doing the same things over and over again and refining them and making them better. And yeah, when I was younger, I took a lot more risks. Guess what? I lost a lot more money. You know, there's the old saying, there are old pilots and there are bold pilots, but there are no old bold pilots. Think about that for a minute. Apply it to investing. I never look for get-rich-quick schemes. I don't invest in the latest fad or probably what's being talked about on CNBC by all the talking heads and the pundits. I don't buy lottery tickets. I don't do any of that, and for the most part, I never have. And again, whenever I have tried to, as a younger man, go out and make some quick cash, it usually didn't work out for me. I've learned over these more than 30-plus years that I've been investing that the old cliche is true. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And so what I'm trying to consistently do is, number one, protect and preserve my principal. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't ever lose money or that I don't make bad investment decisions. But what it does mean is that first and foremost, I'm investing from a fundamental value paradigm. And not value in terms of just value stocks, but I'm investing in things that I believe over time are going to appreciate. And they're going to appreciate not because they've been pumped up in the media or because there's a bunch of hype over them, but I'm investing in something that has intrinsic value. I'm investing in a company that's been around for more than a year or two, and they're profitable, and they show a history of profitability. And sometimes they may stumble, sometimes they may get in trouble, and I'll buy them on the dip. But what I'm always initially looking at is for fundamental intrinsic value. I want a company that has a history of making profits and even better yet, paying dividends. Now, there are some exceptions to that. For example, I own Google. Google doesn't pay dividends, but Google has consistently increased its revenue and increased its bottom line since it went public back in 2004. And again, some of you wise guys are probably saying, well, hey, why didn't you buy Google back in 2004? When it was an IPO, why are you saying not to buy IPOs? Remember, I'm not saying don't buy IPOs. I'm saying I don't buy IPOs. You can do whatever you want with your money. I'm just giving you the rationale for what I do. And yes, it's true. Google has made phenomenal profits and has made a lot of people rich in these past 15 years. But now we look back at it with a normalcy bias or a survivability bias, because Google has been the company that survived over these past 15 years. How many internet-type startup companies occurred right around 2003 or 2006 that have now gone bust? Probably thousands, if not tens of thousands. Certainly more than tens of thousands if you look at all the private companies. It's just like social media. Yes, today everybody can say Facebook is a great investment, but you have to remember all the other social media companies that didn't make it. I like to point out, and I mentioned this in my book, The Robots Are Coming, that there was another company that probably many of you have forgotten about or others of you have never heard of. It was called MySpace. MySpace was a major competitor of Facebook, and you may think, well, yeah, that was a dumb investment, but you know what? Rupert Murdoch put billions of dollars into that company. He bet on MySpace over Facebook and over all the other options he could have invested in startup social media companies. And it was a bust. He lost virtually everything he put into it. And Rupert Murdoch is no dummy. He's incredibly smart and he's worth billions. And he's a media mogul. And yet he made the wrong decision. And he didn't make it alone. I'm sure he had all kinds of MBAs and quants and private equity geniuses on his staff that helped him make that decision. And they made the wrong one. So investing in IPOs is risky. Don't get survivability bias where you take it for granted that just because this other tech company is worth so much today and it went public 10 years ago that you want to jump on the next big hyped up IPO. Hey, and that goes to things like cryptocurrency or marijuana stocks or whatever fashionable thing is being pumped up and hyped in the media. If it doesn't have intrinsic value and a history of showing that intrinsic value, then I don't want to be part of it unless I'm just throwing out pure old speculative Las Vegas money. And I rarely do that. Now, hey, everything I've said up till now has just been a prelude to what I want to talk about. Here are the three reasons, and I'm going to hit them quick. Reason number one, and this is the title of the episode, Lipstick on a Pig. In fact, I think LPOs should be called LSOAP. That's for lipstick on a pig. That's an old saying that my grandfather used to say to describe something that was being dressed up and made to look better than it was. You know, hey, don't buy that old car. That's like putting lipstick on a pig. Well, in a lot of cases, that's what I think IPOs are. And here's the case I'm going to make for that. An initial public offering is much different than all the other stocks that are being traded on the secondary market. And what that means is when it's on the secondary market, you're not necessarily buying it directly from the company. And in 9 times out of 10, you're not buying it from the issuing company. You're buying it just from another individual. It's like if you go out and you buy a used car or a used house, you're not buying it from the original car manufacturer or from the original home builder. You're buying it from somebody that's already bought it. It's a subtle difference, but it's a big difference. And the reason this makes an important difference on an IPO is that on the initial public offering, the company is absolutely 100% receiving the money directly from people that are buying this stock for the first time. And when I say the company, I mean the founders and the original owners of that company. The reason that's important and what it has to do with putting lipstick on a pig is that by and large, companies don't have a whole lot of incentive to talk up their stock price when it's just being sold on the secondary market. Because over time, it's the value that sets the price of that stock. Oh, CEOs do come out and try and make things look good quarter to quarter and all that. But ultimately, they're putting less lipstick on the pig because they're not totally directly benefiting from the rise or the decline of that stock. But that's totally different on an initial public offering. Because on an IPO, that allows the company or its owners or its original founders to start cashing out. And so they want that company to look as best as it's ever going to look. It's like the first impression you want to make on a blind date. And so the company itself is going to do everything they can to make that company look good. Now, I'm not saying they're going to cook the books or anything. That would be illegal. And we know that people would certainly not engage in fraudulent practices like that. But what I am saying is they are going to do whatever they can to finesse that balance sheet. And then they're going to go out and they're going to engage a Wall Street company or an investment banking firm or somebody to promote their stock. This is someone that's going to directly benefit from the sale of that stock. And they are masters at manipulating balance sheets and putting lipstick on a pig, right? Because that's why they work on Wall Street and they have these multi-million dollar compensation packages, because they're that good. And then they're also going to go out to their buddies in the media, and either directly or indirectly, they're going to get the media and talking heads and celebrities to talk that stock up and talk about how pretty that pig looks with all the lipstick on it. So when you start factoring all those things in to what's being built into the price of that stock, what chance do you have as an individual retail investor to know whether or not you're making a good investment choice or you're just buying a big old fat sow that's got some lipstick on it? Even if these things aren't done intentionally, and I'm sure that the wonderful people on Wall Street would never pump and dump anything, but if it's just from a subconscious nature, don't you think their own bias, because they're going to make more money off the sale, is going to at least nudge it a little bit in the direction of putting lipstick on the pig? I think so. That's reason number one. Reason number two, when the IPO comes out, once all the insiders, and I don't necessarily mean insiders like founders and people that work for the company, but all the, you know, inside smart money, the big guns on Wall Street that have the money, that put the financing into these things, that get the sweetheart deals, those are going to be the people that really get in on the initial offering. It's not going to be people like me and you. We're not going to get in on the real sweetheart deal. That's reserved for the muckety-mucks. And so when you do click your mouse button to buy that IPO on that first day or the second day or 3 weeks into it, whatever time frame you're trying to get into that IPO on, who are you competing against? Well, number one, you're competing against all the momentum algorithms, which are trading at a fraction of a second quicker than you are. And number two, you're competing against all the other dimwit individual investors that don't know that they're buying a stock that has lipstick on a pig. You're not competing against the best minds on Wall Street at that point because they've already got in early. You're in there trading with all the retail momentum guys that think because they watch Mad Money with Jim Cramer that they're some kind of Wall Street wizard. And they're buying that stock not based on any fundamental knowledge, but they're buying it strictly on emotion or in the fact that they've heard it hyped up in the media and they think that it's going to go up because they can sell it to some bigger idiot than they are. But you have to remember, it's kind of like socialism. At some point, you run out of other people's money. And when you're dealing with a bunch of amateurs, that money burns out quick. So there it is, number two. You don't want to be competing with amateurs in a market where the momentum is rising and the price is going up simply on emotion. Now the third reason is very much related to the second reason. You see, in the second reason, when you were competing with amateurs, these were people that were like teenagers spending their dad's money, or people that were at their first rodeo. They have no concept of value, and so they're just going to spend, and drive the price up. Now, the third reason is related to that, but it has to do with the psychology of auction trading. In a lot of ways, an IPO is just like an auction. And you can make the argument that any day on Wall Street is like participating in an auction, because that's really what it is. But remember, there are different types of auctions. There are auctions that professionals attend where they don't outbid each other simply because they're caught up in the emotion of the moment, but they know the value of a particular product and they're probably going to turn around and buy it and flip it anyways. And so they have limits on how much they're willing to pay. That's a type of auction that's being driven by a profit motive rather than an emotional motive. But when an IPO comes out, it's like a feeding frenzy. All that lipstick on a pig, all the excitement, all the talk, not only within the media, but around the water cooler at work. All the cool kids going to get in on the hot deal. And they're all going to brag to you about how much money they made on the previous IPO. And that's why an IPO is much more like an auction or a circus performance than a normal day on Wall Street. And so not only are you in there competing as the price is getting talked up and bid up by teenagers with their dad's credit card and no concept of value, and also people the first time at the rodeo, they got no idea what's going on, they got a big hat and no cattle, and then to top it all off, they're hearing that auctioneer calling out, I got 50, how about 52, there's 52, 53, $60, right? They're getting caught up in the emotion of it, and they end up bidding far beyond not only the intrinsic value, but even the hyped up lipstick on a pig value. Think of it like beer goggles. So there you have it. The three reasons I almost never or have never at this point invested in an IPO within at least the first 6 months of it being offered. I don't jump in at least the first 6 months. I sit out until the hype has gone away, until most people have forgotten about it, until several earnings reports have come out and we see increasing sales and increasing profitability. And if you think I'm being too conservative or way off the mark, well, I could be. But go out and look at a wide variety of initial public offerings, not just something that happened in the last month or two. Go out and look at 50 IPOs over the last couple years. And what do you generally see? You generally see after 6 months or maybe 18 or 20 months into it, the price consolidates and stabilizes well below where it initially came out at, or even the average price over the first 3 to 6 months. Some of this has to do with the way that insiders are restricted with the lockup period of when they can go out and sell their shares. But that's not always the case, because even if you look at stocks that have recently come out that don't have a lockup period associated with them,